Hey guys, Lou here. Before we get into today's show, I want to apologize for the audio from last week and this week as well. As you know, if you don't know, I'm sorry, but I bought a new microphone and it's actually on a microphone stand. But the stand was attached to the computer and when I would hit the desk, it would sound like boom, 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 boom in the microphone. And so I have moved the microphone stand away from the desk and, you know, and I'm tapping the desk right now, but it shouldn't be affecting the microphone whatsoever. So you're hearing the boom, boom, boom on occasion like this throughout the episode today as well. I apologize for that, but, it won't be doing that after this week. So let's get into the show. Thanks.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data? Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the battle bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, and tonight's episode is Suddenly Human. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
I'm Brad from Nebraska as well.
No, he's not, guys. He made that up. See, he's actually deep undercover spying for the Federation in the Romulan Empire, like I said last week at the end of the show. So he's just saying he's from Nebraska, but...
supposed to be a secret.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a secret, but we're not going to say which part of Romulus you're currently located. But maybe it's in the Senate floor where everybody's turning to stone. Maybe not.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. We could do. They quit doing that, so...
Not turning anymore, dude.
All right. So, Brad, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I can do that. I'm Brad Gilbert. I live here in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hey, that's interesting. So do I.
It's actually Ralston, Nebraska, but nobody knows where that is.
No.
Like Omaha.
No.
It's on the south side of town. I work as an auditor for a retail supermarket chain, actually for several supermarket chains here in the United States.
Do you know Lou in real life?
Never met him before.
Depends which Lou you're talking about.
Yeah, really. If it's this one, yeah. Actually, Brad is the commissioner of my daughter's recreational softball league.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Sort of like the captain or, you know, of the softball league.
Oh, more like the admiral. I'd say the coach would be the captain. Oh, no, if we were really to apply a Star Trek analogy, I'm thinking the umpires would be the captain. The coaches would be more like the commanders. And it, again, depending on who's under you, you would be an admiral. Fleet admiral. How's that?
A fleet admiral.
There you go. All right. Now, an update, Brad, for you, and new news for James. I don't think I talked about my daughter's knee injury, James, yesterday, did I?
No, you didn't.
I didn't
hear that.
Thursday, she was... they had just started the game. She was in the... I don't know, not in the batter's box, but that's the little circle where the next batter up gets to get to do little practice swings, and then once the next batter is done, they go up and they try to hit the ball.
Right, she's called the batter on deck.
There we go. And While she was doing her little practice swing, bam, all of a sudden she twisted her knee and dropped to the ground. She was out before the first game started, or as the first game was starting, and before she ever had a chance to even play anything. Well, we took her to the doctor Friday. We actually kept her out of school because the PE teacher would make her run, whether she wants to or not. And without a doctor's note, he can't do anything. So we had to keep her out. Took her to the doctor. He says he doesn't really think it's all that serious. It may just be a little strain, may have pulled a tendon or something, and it's just going to take it could take up to 3 months to heal. I'm like, oh, good Lord. But he says, or it could be just she twisted her knee a little bit and she'll be fine here. Let's just take it week by week. So she's out of PE for the week. However, I've talked about Alexa before and how she is a very, very accomplished liar. I don't know, Brad, because just before the show, I had to go pick them up at 50th and F Street at what used to be the No Frills, because they decided to walk down the trail with two dogs. And when I went to get her, she's running down a little embankment to get to the car. So, you know, I don't know what to make of this. The way she fell and the immediately started screaming, that I told me she hurt herself, but I don't think it was as bad as she thinks and not nearly as bad as a doctor wondered it might be, because she wants to come back tomorrow and play softball.
Well, there's a lot of forces at play when you talk about the body and the joints. I had injured my back and could hardly get out of bed, but I could go in the backyard and pick up logs and carry those without any problem at all. It's the weirdest thing.
Right, but she spent the last 2 days with ice packs on her knee, rotating ice packs, ibuprofen, but yet today she went for almost a mile walk and is walking absolutely perfectly normal. When we took her from the field, we almost had to carry her. But today...
Yeah.
2 days later, on a badly, very badly injured knee, all of a sudden she's walking absolutely perfectly normal. I don't know what to make of that.
It's a miracle.
Yeah, I guess we could call it that.
It's a miracle that you witness firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
Don't question. It's wonderful.
Right, yes. I'll try and go with that there. Yesterday, she wanted an MRI. And I said, the doctors are not going to authorize, and insurance won't pay for it if the doctor doesn't think it's necessary. That's about $5,000-$7,000. And today she's running around like nothing ever happened. It's not swollen. I don't think it's bruised. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I was telling James about the smoky haze in Omaha today.
It's from fires down in Oklahoma and Kansas.
Minnesota this time. Kansas. Yeah.
Was it Minnesota this time?
Yeah, Minnesota this time. They're wildfires. All right, so basically, I've been trying to get you on either the Lou Trek Show or the Battle Bridge for how long now, Brad?
About a year and a half, 2 years.
Just about.
Maybe 2 years.
Just about. Both our daughters play on for the Ralston softball little recreational league, and I got to tell you that I think this is Alexa's fourth year, I believe, and it's just a lot of fun. I actually enjoy going to the girls' softball. She enjoys it. It's she absolutely loves doing it, and I get a kick out of it. Just she's up to bat and she tries to hit that ball. And the beautiful thing about it all is none of them are professionals, and you can tell some of them are trying softball for the first time. So when they throw the ball, sometimes it sails 3 feet above everybody's head. Sometimes it rolls to the batter. Sometimes it hits the ground, hits the batter in the face mask, or sometimes the umpire tries to catch the foul ball and ends up whacking his hand. But it is a lot of fun. And they, you know, they have their own concession stand, James. There's a concession stand, and you can get anything you need there. Hot dogs, nachos, sodas, Laffy Taffy. I love those little apple pops with the, you know, caramel around it. Those are pretty addictive. But how long have you been doing the softball thing there, Brad?
Well, I'm trying to think. Maybe 6 years, 6 or 8 years, maybe.
Mm.
They started out, you know, Olivia played when she was just really little tyke.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's second year of high school. Started out as a like an assistant coach, and I became a head coach. And all this was volunteer work. It was one of those deals where I would get a call from the commissioner, you know, you don't volunteer, we're not going to have a coach. We don't have a coach, we don't have a team. Mm. So are you in? Yep. And I got suckered all the way up to commissioner. So.
Bet you enjoy it.
And, I do. I really do.
And you know what's funny is I've actually considered sponsoring a team. Because I thought, wouldn't it be kind of cute? When you sponsor the team, James, like a business or an organization that sponsors a team, they put the name of that organization on their jerseys. And I thought, wouldn't it be a hoot if, you know, my daughter was on the Lou Trek Show team?
Yeah, I actually think that's a good idea. I've thought about that in the past as well. Not Lou Trek Show, but just, you know, James is great. I've always tried to work out how much money I'd need to have burned in a hole in my pocket to be able to get that on a on the little local football team.
Well, in this case, it's not that much. I don't remember what it was, Brad, but it wasn't that much at all, actually.
Well, we've changed this season, so we have some different packages for sponsors. So depending on what package you want, you can get a link on our webpage, or we have some banners and some other types of frills that we offer the sponsors. So
mm-hmm.
Kind of a neat deal.
Okay. Well, if anybody wants to check that out, I'll put a link in the show notes. Why not? It's to the Ralston Girls Softball Association, and that would be at rgsa.org. Check it out, Doc, if you want, and you'll see what it's all about, rgsa.org. And if you want to, you can even sign up to volunteer in the concession stand. They could always use that help, James.
Yep. Next time I'm around, I'll head over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fabulous.
Okay, so we are here to talk about Suddenly Human. And the synopsis for tonight's show is: the Enterprise crew discovers a young boy being raised by the aliens who killed his parents. This is the fifth episode of season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date was October 15th, 1990. It was written by Ralph Phillips and directed by Gabriel Beaumont. Guest stars include Chad Allen as Jono, or Jeremiah Rosa, Sherman Howard as Endor, and Barbara Townsend as Admiral Rosa. So, what do we think about this episode? Brad, as our guest, why don't you go ahead, give a little brief synopsis of what we should expect with your thoughts for this episode.
Well, we begin with a disabled ship, a Talarian ship. Suffered the sensors report it's had some radiation leak.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some concern at the beginning whether they should actually go aboard or not, because the Talarians had been some border disputes with the Federation. There'd been a war, and they're considered hostile, but not so hostile that that they're continually at war. It's not like the, previously with the Klingon Empire or something like that, where they, could have a ship in other person's space, and then it was like a big, act of war. This was, it's more friendly than that, but not really friendly. Does that sound about right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So were you looking forward to this one, or?
Was I looking forward to this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to all of them. I like to see how they solve problems. That's what I like about Star Trek. It's different than other sci-fi shows. It's always about humanity adapting and overcoming, the problems that are, tossed their way and making their way in the universe and developing relationships with aliens. And, so it's a lot of practicality, I think, with Star Trek. And this one also doesn't disappoint.
Mm-hmm. Okay. James, how about you? What's your quick thoughts?
I don't want to come across as a hater, but I've never really enjoyed this episode. Coming off the back from last week when we recorded, when I was so enthusiastic and positive, I just think this episode is just a little bit, it's too plodding for my opinion. I think that where they get to in the end is absolutely fine. I think it takes them too long to do that, and I don't think that kind of the shades of gray that are inherent in the story that they're trying to tell, which is fundamentally about a child out of a child out of his a legitimate family being raised. It doesn't have to be aliens. It can just be someone misplaced, someone kept away, someone accidentally maybe even taken away as a child and raised by foster parents until discovering he's real parents. I don't think the shades of grey are discussed enough by the lead characters. And as a result, I get a little bit frustrated by the crew. Mm. However, the turn at the end, I think, is completely legitimate and really where we should have been all along. I'm not actually that big a fan of this one. How about you, Lou?
I miss the days when you and I agreed on things.
Oh, are you coming in good?
I wasn't going to be coming in good before I watched it again today, because I don't even think I told you this, but I started driving for Uber, and I don't even know if it's in London or not, but basically it's like a bring your own car taxi service is what it amounts to. And
we've got Uber.
Okay. Love Uber. I love using Uber whenever your car's down and you need to go somewhere. Just pop it on your smartphone. But I went out today because I saw that some parts of the area were surging at 5 times a normal rate. So I thought, I'm not doing anything. The dog keeps pawing me in the face to go outside. I'm just going to get up and see what I can find. So I did a few runs today, and I almost completely forgot about this show. But then my wife sent me a text saying, hey, before you do your show today, can you run to the store for some eggs? And I'm like, oh, crap, I got to do the show. So I got some eggs, came back home, watched the episode, took some notes, and then I started thinking, it's actually better than I remember. Not the best, but it's better than I remember. This here, to extend our softball analogy, this here throws a few curveballs. You think it's pretty obvious what Picard has to do, but not so sure that happens. So... But this is the first episode that Jeri Taylor has anything association with. And as you know, she becomes the executive producer of Voyager and gives it the feminine touch that Janeway needed so much. Any comments on that, James, before I go on?
No. I mean, I was aware that this is Jeri Taylor's first script. I think it's the story, right, that she brings in. I think it's obvious that it's her, but maybe that's been unfair. Maybe it's that in hindsight you can see that it is her. But I do think that it is. I don't want to use the word feminine because I think that makes it, that's just tarring with a single brush. But it is much more of a smaller show, a much more kind of interpersonal show, I suppose.
Right.
Family oriented.
Okay.
Family issue oriented, at least.
Right.
Touchy feely.
Say that again.
Touchy feely.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, she does the relationships episodes. So. Okay, so. And now we don't know what the ship was doing before this distress call came in, so I can only come up with a guess. And here's what I believe was happening. I think the Enterprise was headed for Ryza. And not for what you think. I think Picard was going to return the Horgon. You know, get a refund. As it turns out, he's been, I don't know, it's turned him into some kind of chick magnet, and he could just never get any work done. So he wants to get rid of it. But Picard, being the diplomat that he is, he doesn't want to risk this Horgon falling into, say, Ferengi hands. So he's going to hand deliver the Horgon back to the hotel where he bought it. Unfortunately, he never makes it because we get a distress signal from the Talarian observation craft. And I think, Doc, you and I have talked about this in the past. The difference between Talarian, Tellurians, and to some others.
I think there's Taradian as well. But with that Ryza preamble, Lou, I think you've made the show like 5 times better than it is. So you know, all they needed like 2 or 3 lines, like Captain's log. I am headed back to Ryza because this damn Horgon is keeping me up all night. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I'll be more productive once it's been returned to its you know, to the shop I got it from.
There you go. He couldn't just jettison out an airlock, so he had to try and return it. But so anyway, let's you know, are there any other near ships in the vicinity? Of course not. That would be the Enterprise. The Enterprise is the nearest ship, as always. So it looks like it's up to the Enterprise. But Data points out that we might want to consider slowing down a bit because they've been known to booby-trap their ships and then put out distress signals. And that tactic, guerrilla or otherwise, has resulted in 219 fatalities in a 3-day period. And making matters worse for all you people out there who says, oh, come on, they can detect that. Nope, they can't. Somehow the scanners just aren't any good. Why would that be, Doc? School us.
What? No, I don't care. I don't know. It's I mean, actually, Riker's, he has this thing in this bit where I think he's the guy who says can't have Ascanis detected. And he goes, nope, it's, you know, based on such and such tech. And he goes, oh, even, you know, even the tricorders won't work either. And you just, you know, Riker doesn't get that many lines this episode.
No.
And the ones he gets are usually these just crank filler stuff. But no, you know, to be honest with you, I kind of thought that by the time that Troy mentions that there were survivors on the ship and she can sense them, I thought from that point I was just convinced that this worry that they had that they were being led into a trap was not valid. You know, I from that point onwards I went, oh, okay, well, it's good that we have Troy on here because we've conclusively proved that going onto the ship and rescuing the survivors is the thing to do. That and the fact that there's the warship also heading over at warp. To me, it was pretty 99% certain that it was a legitimate distress signal. And as a result, I think it kind of killed any tension that they might have wanted. Well, but maybe they just wanted to kill it. I don't know.
Warship, huh? Why couldn't had Worf said anything about the glob fly? Well, we'll find out later. We'll find out why I say that. But what do we find on the ship? On that observation craft, we find, blinky lights.
we always see a lot of long blinky lights in Star Trek that, you know, seem to, you see some apparatus that has some, I don't know, little arms or hands, and in between these two apparatuses are long blinky lights that you make, you know, you wonder what they actually do, but we'll never know. We never know. But we have a ship of Talarian children whose World of Warcraft has gone awry this week and almost blew up the ship. But wait, there's a human boy there. Uh-oh, what are we going to do? Cut to the commercial. So what do you guys think of the teaser so far? Is it a tease or is it...
Well, I was just stuck being baffled. I mean, we had a radiation leak. It was quite serious. We had, you know, like radiation burns, respiratory distress. Nothing's mentioned about how that radiation got cleared out, how the away team was protected from that, or anything like that. So, I mean, I just get so bogged down in those details that sometimes that by the time the commercial breaks over, I'm ready to have a beer.
You mean a Romulan L, no less.
That's right.
All right. So how about you, Doc? Any thoughts on the teaser so far?
I thought it was kind of relatively... actually, I think you guys don't have this phrase in the US, bog standard. Do you have bog standard as a reference? It's very kind of, you know, normal. Very basically, it's a standard opener. Nothing special, I thought. There's nothing that kind of immediately hits you.
What was that first word?
Bog, as in swamp.
Bog, B-O-G?
Yep.
Never heard of that. But, you know, I'm going to be typing it. Okay.
Well, that's where they threw the human sacrifices in the bog, right?
Oh, no. I don't think so. James would never do that. At least not without his morning coffee. And there's coffee in that nebula. But that's a different story. Okay, so we're back from the commercials. About four or five of them, I'm sure. And we're now in sickbay with four Talarian... See? I know I'm going to do that. Talarian humans. And this one human boy named Jono. And they're all being examined. But you could kind of tell. Couldn't you kind of tell that they were all tense? That something was about to blow? Anyone? Don't everyone talk at once. It's now time it's now time to give our ratings on this episode on a scale of one. Right,
they're in sick bay. There seems to be some tension with the human Jono. But we don't have any security presence there in sick bay with, you know, potential hostile people aboard, which I thought was, again, kind of a strange thing. But we do have Deanna Troi in there, so she can kind of read everybody's emotions.
Yes. 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 When she's not trying to remove articles of clothing, that is. Yes, that is true. She could tell that something's not right here. But Dr. Crush... Oh, I'm sorry.
So that removed items of clothing sounded a lot worse than what you're referring to here, which is when she went over to the dude and asked for him to remove his gloves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it took me a couple of seconds there to get what you're referring to.
Oh, well, I'm going to be talking about that in a couple minutes. But first, Dr. Crusher offers to pimp her own son with the Talarian human boy, but it's interrupted.
Did she? I didn't know this.
Well, yeah. I mean, she said, I have a son your age. Maybe you want to meet him. I thought she did. Oh, maybe there's a little translation issue on what I read and what she said, but that mistakes happen. But first she's handed a medical report and says, now how did this happen? When all of a sudden, bam, they all start moaning in unison. That is called the Benar. And I guess I have a pretty serious question here about the Benar. Doesn't that hurt their vocal cords?
Well, I don't know if actually the Benar came from their vocal cords. Jono's apparently does. It's the second time I see him do it, which we'll get to. But I couldn't actually, when I first saw this, I didn't know where this sound was actually coming from.
Mm.
You know, maybe they have some...
No, I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's about what it is. I didn't know if it was coming out of their heads or what it was. It just sort of appeared.
Hmm.
And I didn't see him like breathing in and exhaling. It was just all at once in unison. It was kind of weird.
Hmm.
Alien thing, I guess.
Maybe they're the Terralian. Maybe they're the Telerian musical group. The Moaners. Jono and the Moaners. Trying to spin something on this, Doc, isn't it? Does it make it any better for you?
No, that's all good. I mean, I kind of... So, one of the problems that I have with this episode is that, you know, I think it's at 5 minutes they start making the noise. And then at that point, it's when Picard comes in. And I think one of the problems that I have is the interaction between Picard and the boy. Because Picard comes in and he's got, you know, he's got all the presence and all the authority of a supply teacher coming into a school and can't get through to the kids. And then he kind of raises his voice a bit. And 3 or 4 seconds later, they all decide to be quiet for no particular reason. And I'm really afraid to say this, but at that point I thought, oh, it's going to be one of these episodes. And I don't know. I really didn't like the way they tried to portray Picard. And I think they tried to mix up too much of this kind of fish out of water humor into a story which is fundamentally like a much more serious story about a child out of the emotional well-being of a child that's been displaced. And I just don't think that was able to be married up in this episode. So that's why I'm kind of down on it. And unfortunately, you get signs of this juxtaposition from very, very early in the episode, because you go from that like fun little shouty scene straight into Beverly starting to think that there might be an abusive influence at work here. And I just didn't feel that it gelled as well as it should have done.
Hmm.
Agreed.
Okay. That's fine. Well, they all immediately stop, you know, after he claps his hand. Stop all that noise! Well, you know, obviously, if the captain does that, he's going to stop, because these people obviously respect the authority of the captain. And that's the only way reason they stopped. So they go to discuss about what they're going to do with this boy when, again, Counselor Troy asked Jono to undress for her. So I guess there's another serious question here. If we were Jono and not our married selves, that we all three are, and Counselor Troy suggests that you remove an article of clothing, would you? Would you resist, or would you start running around and trying to get away?
Well, it's an adolescent human boy. Got Beverly Crusher on one side of him and Deanna Troy on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Probably be terrified to death. That's probably why he was doing the wailing, really.
That could be. Because she was trying to dissect him.
That's right.
There you go. And they never remove those gloves because they don't want to touch an alien. All right. Okay, but anyway, Captain comes in and he solves the situation. That's when they finally call for security. And you're right. Maybe because the concern was that if Worf was there, that group of people may have eventually taken over the ship.
I really doubt that they were worried that they'd take over the ship. But I mean, you know, being a risk control guy in my real life, I mean, I'm always thinking about, you know, what could go wrong. I mean, we have a hostile force, albeit a, you know, young training mission kids, you know, that were injured. But I'd still have at least security post outside the sick bay door. That's what I would have done.
Right. I'm sure all five of them were trying to get their Ogla status. If they were Kazon, by the way. But they're not. So Data bursts on the comm channel to say that Starfleet's calling. Gee, I wonder why. But anyway, Dr. Crusher confines Jono to his quarters until further notice. And it was kind of funny, the conversation he had with Worf, because you could see Worf. I kind of thought maybe Worf needed to just pop the little punk and just walk out the door. But what do you guys think of the conversation with, I would never let a female tell me what to do.
Now, what I'd say, I think... So one thing I was going to say that, I mean, despite me being a little bit down on the episode, I do think that what they have with the race they bring on board, which we've not really had any backstory on, I think they do a good job at kind of padding out the backstory. They're not just complete clones, and you know, the issue of the women does come up, and it does come up when he meets the Admiral later on, and you can see that that kind of just pulls at him. There is this idea of them, kind of the age of decision comes in play. I think that they did a relatively okay job at setting up the alien species, and also that allowed him to play with Worf, I think, pretty well. So I actually quite like the engagement with Worf.
Okay. All right.
And I saw this as relying on some of the stereotypes of East versus West, especially right around the tail end of the Cold War era. You know, Klingons had always, in Star Trek history, sort of represented, you know, maybe the, you know, those others on the other side of the curtain. You know, the Chinese or the Russians back during the Cold War, and the Federation, obviously, representing, you know, Western society, and I saw that in this as well, with you know, the Western society being more progressive, and you know, taking down barriers between genders and race, and being, you know, free and diplomatic, whereas the, you know, other Eastern type of aliens, you know, we're kind of backwards that way, still fitting in the old stereotypes, you know, men and women, and you know, the rigidity of you know, class and rank and that sort of thing.
Okay. All right, well then, as it turns out, this boy is the grandson of Admiral Rosa, who really may be the only member of her progeny left, because her, wasn't it her, her children were killed, her family was killed in different various skirmishes, and the only ones left are her and her little old husband, so, I guess, and we're not going to, I don't want to answer the question now, because, well, then again, we all know what happened, but we'll get to the moral of this debate later, or this story of does the boy go back with the Talarians or does she go to Grandmama? But first, they're going to try to teach him how to be human. And obviously, he needs some therapy. He needs help. And the best person to do that would be Counselor Troi. But unfortunately, she's a female. And he will not respect females, so maybe he's part Ferengi. But anyway, it looks like
his teeth are too nice.
Yeah, they are too nice. Yeah, you're right. This is a job for Picard. Now
again, I think that this particular bit is played a bit too much in a jolly fashion because you are right. At this point, everyone thinks that the clear the thing is that he has to go back, to be human. Now, they do mention he's 14, so even in human society, he's probably got another 2 years or so until he's considered an adult. And even Wesley kind of knew what he wanted to do at 15 when he was applying for Starfleet Academy. So he's not got that much longer to go. And I know the story has to be kind of struck at this age because you fundamentally need to show that there's input from the child that should be recognized and considered without it being, you know, without thinking it's being brainwashed or something he's just parroting back. But you don't get a feeling that the crew are thinking, you know, what the boy wants. And as a result, the mood they're in at the moment is that we have to bring this guy away from the life he's known for the last 10 years or however long it was, and into a different society, a different culture. He obviously doesn't speak English. He probably can't relate even away from the male-female divide issue. And he's going to have a lot of trauma, knowing that his family perhaps is not what he thought his family was. And that's all, you know, you're going to need serious help. You're going to need serious help from counselors and psychiatrists and all the rest of it to make sure that you make that move smoothly. But unfortunately, they reduce it down to just, you know, we'll nudge Picard in the right order just because he happens to show a bit of authority to Picard. And I know that he's shown authority to Picard because he's a captain, but I think that, you know, the extra help that you would clearly need, either through Troi or her team. I mean, I don't know, does Troi have a team? It seems to step back a bit too much in this episode, and I don't think that that's really what would have happened.
It's an interesting point I never thought about. Is Troi like the head ship counselor, or does she actually have a head team, or is she on duty 24/7, or are there people under her that sometimes do counseling duties? But that's an interesting point. I've never thought about that. Huh. Okay. Well, Jono, either way, Jono doesn't like his quarters. And since he's always lived with the captain, so they arrive to Captain Picard's quarters. And he tries to play it down because it's so boring in here. But look at all the shiny toys. I actually thought Picard was going to have a stroke watching his antiques in the bulldozer hands of Jono. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And I can completely relate to that at the moment, just with the, you know, the small round one, you know, running around the place and destroying stuff. So you have, you know, when you have small kids and when you don't have kids and you've not kind of been in that lifestyle, you realize very quickly that you can no longer have nice things, especially when there's someone coming in new to the environment. So, all a lot of fun.
Tell me about it. Yeah. You can't have nice things when you have children or dogs. They're just as bad. We come home almost daily to find something chewed. Oh, man. But,
I think it furthers. Sorry, I think it furthers the point about Picard and how nervous he is around children, and you know, his fears of, you know, his inability to command children like he can the rest of the Starfleet officers.
Right, because he even tries his hand at plowing out excuses as to why he's just not the right person for this job. And was it my imagination, or did that turn into a counseling session with Picard and Troy in his ready room? You know,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your childhood, Kath. She's trying to get to the root of Picard's problem, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but in the end, she does kind of walk away and goes, well, you're going to have to do it yourself. Yeah, bye.
Yes.
And it turns it into this funny story about, you know, by the time that the captain and the kid move in together, you've got like the odd couple situation here. And before long, he's turning up and he's listening to loud music. Troy is almost enjoying the discomfort that the captain has in handling this. And you would have thought the captain might be, you know, busy or needed elsewhere. But no, I mean, for the purpose of the story, it's played off that isn't it a lot of fun to find someone that's slightly nervous around children having to be engaged with children, despite all of the psychological ramifications of doing this experiment? Isn't it fun?
Yes. I'll say one word. Farah Jaka. Enough said. Okay, so... Yeah, so
I remember that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not too far away. So it's time for Picard to flip through some of Jono's family picture albums. And now that doesn't work very well either, because now he's starting to get memories of this, and now, you know, it's obviously starting to affect him.
Although I have to say, I thought that he dealt, I mean, the Jono character, I thought he dealt with it relatively fine. I mean, Picard bluntly states that the person he considers to be his father killed his true, you know, birth family.
Right.
And that's going to have to hit you hard regardless. But he was very stoic and came back with, well, you know, there are lots of things that happened during the war. He accepts that certain things happened. It's almost as if he was, like, you know, born again into the new culture. So I thought he was quite strong in that sense. But then obviously as he kind of, you know, looks through the photos, and there is obviously the emotional pull at that stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, he comes off as a big boy. You know, he wants to be an adult. He wants to be a bad boy. Come deep down inside when he's all alone and remembering these things, he's just a little boy in a strange land right now, and it terrifies him. Right? Maybe?
Well, no, I completely agree. I think he is.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, it's like he maybe had some of these memories and feelings, you know, being there left with his mother as she, you know, lay dead and being all alone with her, you know, had those deeply repressed, and, you know, now seeing her face and the photographs, you know, was a good trigger for, you know, post-traumatic stress onset.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Okay. If you don't have anything else, James, I'll go and head on to the next thing.
Yeah, sure. Keep going.
Okay.
Keep rolling.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Talarians arrive with the claim check to take Jono and the others back. But, you know, at the same time, Jono's starting to remember this battle in which his parents were killed. But back on the bridge, Captain Endon is thanking Picard for saving their people. And he says, beam them on over and I'll send you a bottle of our finest... Wait a minute, what do you mean Jono's not coming back? Uh-oh. There's a problem. So he's willing to go to war, such as it is, with the Federation over this boy. And one of the things I thought was interesting was a little bit later, Worf says, are we really? Is this all worth one boy? Did you have any problem with that?
Well, I thought I had, okay, from the perspective of Worf, I think there is a problem from the Klingon culture, but I had flash forwards of Alexander, and I was thinking, you're probably right. You probably won't care. You'll ship your kid off as soon as he gets slightly inconvenienced. And I mean, how many times? He obviously didn't disown him, but Alexander spent most of his life away from Worf.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of a surprise.
But then again, this comes up later, of course, when we talk about Alexander, but he didn't know about Alexander. So, I mean, I don't know.
Even once he does, he doesn't move in with him. He ships him off to Earth first, right?
Right. Yeah. Because Helena and Sergei can handle Klingons better than a Klingon can. All right. So it turns out the Talarian custom allows them to claim the children of their slain enemies from battle. And they're not the only ones. If you think about it, the Bajorans do that as well. Remember that one?
The Bajorans don't, right? I mean, the Bajorans, we were talking about the DS9 episode Cardassians.
Yes, yeah.
Which actually shares a lot of similarities to this episode. Mm-hmm. I personally think that Cardassians itself is a much better episode. It's a much tighter episode, and it's also got the added dynamic of there being first of all, there's this political kind of conspiracy thing going over the top, which is okay. But then there's also this dynamic with the oppressed having to take pity on the oppressors or the offspring of the oppressor. And I think that was, I think that's very characteristic of the Bajorans and their strong moral standard or their strong religious teachings, whatever you want to throw it down to. This is slightly different in the sense that he kind of stole a baby and ran away rather than was left a baby and took care of him. But I don't think, the two storylines aren't a million miles away, and maybe through a slightly different prism, pretty much the same, the same thing is going on here, right? A former enemy's child is being raised in your family.
Right. But of course, the decisions end up being radically different. And we'll get to that again later. So, basically, it comes down to Picard has decided, Andor is welcome to leave. He can take the other four people, but Jeremiah is going to have to stay. Of course, I keep going back and forth between Jonah and Jeremiah, depending on the point of view. But unfortunately, we're going to go to war. What should Picard do? Picard ends up letting Andor meet with the boy, but it has to be supervised. And Andor gives Jonah the decision. Do you want to stay with these ugly humans or come back with me? And he informs him they might be going to war over this, and Jonah might die in this battle. I thought, everything I'm seeing about the Talarians, their guerrilla tactics, they seem kind of badasses in a sense, until the battle starts to begin, sort of, or till the first threats are made. But what do you think about the interaction up to that point? Is this on?
No, I'll jump in then. I mentioned it before. I think that the Talarian, their culture is relatively tightly defined. I think that you almost have as much backstory with these guys as you do with the Kazon after, three and a half seasons of Voyager. So I think you can see where they're coming from, and I bought into them as being, I kind of knew where they were coming from, and whether it's just one facet of their society because they are these guys are the military dudes, maybe, but I quite liked it, and I thought that the story didn't fall down because of a one-dimensional alien culture in my mind. So to that extent, they did their job well.
Okay, Brad.
Well, I was thinking about the claim that the Talarians have to claim the children of their fallen enemies when they are left alone is not new. It's been in our own histories. I guess most recently, you know, I don't know if it had an impact on when this was written, but, you know, we had, for example, the Mountain Meadows Massacre in the late 1800s, where a, you know, a stagecoach company was under attack by some militants, Mormon militants in Utah, and all the adults and older children were killed, and the infants and younger children were scooped up and raised in Utah with these Mormon families. And I don't know if that had an impact on that, but it's a very powerful story, you know, where you have, you know, even in war and atrocities that you know, the humanity of you know, raising these children as your own and caring for them is very powerful. And I think there in that scene where Picard was speaking with Endor, is that his name? I think that was very clear that you know, that Jonah was loved and cared for, and you know, his father was very proud of him and his accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And so there were some really strong family bonds there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. However, the Talarian warships are pretty much the equivalent of what I talked about earlier, the Klingon Globfly. And their arsenal is, this is what they were armed with, neutral particle weapons. What does that mean, Doc? Maybe some rocks?
So did they say neutral?
It sounded like it said neutral particle weapons.
It's probably some type of non-ionized energy beam of some description. Neutral doesn't, never sounds good, right?
No.
It's like you're not going to have like a neutral warhead. You'll probably want to have a strong one or a kick-ass one. Actually, one thing I do remember, sorry, just sliding back very, very slightly. I know that when they have the captain of the Trillian ship on the view screen, and Picard goes to him and he goes, "Look, we found in the custody a human boy. You know, I demand an explanation." And almost words there came back were, "You know, no explanation is necessary. Now, here's my explanation. He's my son and I claimed him from battle." And I thought that was a weird way that they had written that sentence. He claims there's nothing necessary, and then he contradicts himself within seconds. Mm. But that's just a minor aside that I had forgotten from before.
That's all right. Okay, well then, other than the neutral, I thought this is neutral particle weapons, we have high energy X-ray lasers, which is what my doctor took of my daughter's knee the other day. And
they're not going to be that high energy, what you're going to have of the knee.
What?
Because you can do some pretty serious damage with X-rays.
So you think it says high energy X-ray lasers. So basically they use it to see what's inside the other person's ship?
No, it's just that, just think about a, you know, very, very heavy light that's shooting out X-rays and just keep turning it up to 11 and then beyond 11. And you start getting into pretty damaging beam there.
I see. That makes sense. Oh, okay. And finally, they have what I thought he said was Merculite rockets. Globfly. So, obviously, they're no match for the Enterprise. And at this point, I was pretty disappointed. I mean, these guys seem like badasses, and all of a sudden, no match for the Enterprise. Oh, well, what's the point? I mean, this is what I keep saying about all these curveballs. It was, you know, at this point of this exchange, it's to show the audience that no matter what the Talarians think they're going to do, they really can't do anything. So there's no threat here. There's no need to give the boy back to them or face destruction of the Federation flagship. It's very clear they're setting things up for this final decision.
But in a way, what it means is that the final decision is a pure conscious a conscience decision. It's not based on being threatened. So had I understand that when you have higher stakes, then the decisions you might make may be more profound. But also at the same time, if you're going to put a gun to someone's head and claim that they have to, you know, read a statement under duress, then what they're saying and what they're doing really probably isn't what they believe. So I think that they were trying intentionally to keep like the moral message here as pure as possible, so that when they make the decision, it's not because these people were a threat. It was because they came to that conclusion.
Right. And I think they... Well, go ahead, Brad.
I was just going to say, if you go back to the beginning where we're talking about these guerrilla tactics and that sort of thing, I think there may have been some thought around, you know, keeping things peaceful with this group, because they can cause trouble down the road. Maybe they're not an immediate threat, but in the long term, they, you know, like types of suicide missions and you know, other guerrilla type acts, that they could be a problem to the Federation. So I think it might have been one of the considerations that you know, the Enterprise could make with this situation.
Hmm. Okay. And again, you know, they show us the Admiral herself, Admiral Rosa. She gets to video Skype with Jeremiah to celebrate the return of her grand boy, and she looks forward to bringing him home. And so again, it looks like Picard has no choice, because obviously the Admiral is looking forward to him and she is his boss. So, but again, there's the twist there, because what is Jeremiah going home to? His parents are dead. Their siblings are dead. The only thing left is this old lady and her old husband. And obviously, Picard knows this is what he's returning to, is an elderly couple who have absolutely zero in common with him. And had he had any, his parents left or any siblings, maybe the decision could have been different. But you take all this into account, and the fact that he is the age of decision, he wants to go back to the Talarians. The Talarians obviously are cherishing this boy and love him deeply, so therefore there was only one decision to make. But we haven't gotten there yet. First, they have to try one more time to get Jono interested in becoming human again. And what better way of doing that than by playing some racquetball and enjoying some banana split in 10 forward with Wesley?
Yeah, I was actually a bit surprised, and if I'm critical, I'd say that, you know, we're at the 30-minute mark or so on the story. So you're two-thirds of the way through when you're not including the breaks. And I think that in my mind, by this point, the moral story and the drama should be climaxing, but we seem to have time to be able to take a, you know, 10-minute detour to, you know, pretty much, you know, burgers and bowling, or the 20th century equivalent. And I just felt that as a result, when I'm being critical, it just, to me, it was just a sign that the episode just wasn't tight enough with the journey that we as viewers should have been taken on for, you know, with this storyline.
Right. But again, there's those curveballs I keep talking about. What they tried to do was make it seem that Jonah was starting to acclimate, and maybe this isn't such a bad life after all. I mean, after he did get to slap Wesley with some banana split and have a lot of laughs. So, you know, Picard is doing he's doing it right. He's getting it right, and he's going to be able to sleep soundly tonight. Or will he? No, because as Picard is sleeping, Jonah decides he's going to take him out. Or was he? I don't think he meant to kill Picard. Do you? And I'll tell you why, but I want to hear what you think first.
So I'm going to jump in and then I'll defer to Brad. But in my opinion, what we had, and I think this last bit of the episode is the good bit. This is where the like align stuff, and I think it's a little bit too rushed. And I don't think it's necessarily explicit what my theory behind this. what I'm going to say, what I think happens. But I think that he is pulled in two directions, and it gets to the point where he's, you know, he's not willing to do that. And I effectively think he's, you know, he's committing suicide by cop kind of thing. So he's doing an action that he knows is going to get him out of this predicament. And from the family's perspective on the Tyrellians, it looks like he attacked his enemy, and maybe he might be able to salvage a bit of dignity or honor in that. And from the other people's perspective, he wasn't able to fully embrace humanity, and he kind of gets out of this conundrum. And I think that's what he was... I took away from it that that's what he was trying to do there.
Okay, Brad?
Yeah, I agree with that, but I think he really did believe that he was going to be subject to, you know, to the death penalty for attacking the captain. I think that he was pulled in two different directions, as we mentioned, but I think that it was such a difficult decision that possibly he did want to see himself be put to death, and instead of having to make a conscious choice in the matter. And yes, I think that, you know, attacking the captain and would definitely bring him honor with the Tyrellian people.
Okay. Then I think we all kind of agree, because I was thinking almost the same thing, that he knew he was, so far as the way it looks, he's going to be sent back to a terrible, terrible life. He wants to go back. They're not going to let him. So his way out is to do something that would take him out of the equation. And it'd be, but he obviously can't commit suicide. That would be dishonorable, I suppose. So the next best thing is try killing one of your enemies. And that was his thought, I think. I don't know. Instead, he's not going to grandma's after all. He might be going to jail. But just as we get to that point, and then here go, we start the micro war with the Khmer lobbing threats. If Jono isn't in on his lap in 5 minutes, they'll begin throwing spitballs at the Enterprise. Spitballs, guys. No one's laughing. I thought that's funny.
I was laughing. I chuckled.
He chuckled. Okay. But, and I don't even want to, you know, I don't even care about the conversation Picard has. Why did you do it, Jono? You know, because it was pretty obvious. But obviously that conversation and the fact that what he was thinking about, that's what, you know, made Picard make his final decision. But unfortunately, he didn't make it within the 5 minutes. And just as the Chimera starts picking up rocks to throw at him, and Picard knew that, you know, obviously it was going to screw up the ship's new paint job, and decided to return Jono to Endar, the only father he's ever loved. Do we agree with the decision? And like you said, James, this is very close to Cardassian. When, I can't think of the boy's name, but you could tell he was raised in a hateful environment because he hates his own Cardassian people. So they were, that Bajoran was being mentally abusive to the Cardassian boy, whereas this Talarian in their customs is being physically abusive to the human boy. But yet the decisions were completely different. Were they both right? So was this decision right?
I thought this decision was right. And I'm going to question, I don't think he was being abused. I know that on paper there were signs of, you know, physical activity and stuff that maybe would have suggested abuse had it been, you know, had these injuries been occurring on Wesley, who basically spends his entire day in the library or at helm. Yes, there are questions to answer. But I think someone going through boot camp, someone training for the military, someone in that world, I was satisfied with the father's explanation that he was working hard and doing what he wanted to do in order to make him proud and achieve and serve his country or whatever it happens to be the equivalent of. I thought it was completely right for him to go back, mainly because even in Earth years, he's going to be an adult soon. He's going to be able to do whatever he wishes. It didn't seem like he was in a very hostile environment. And I think that, ripping him out of that world for 18 months, staying at Nan's house before running away as soon as you can to rejoin, to me, it didn't seem like there would be anything to gain there. And in my mind, I think that they played this decision a little bit too one-sided throughout the episode. And I probably thought it was one-sided, but I thought it was one-sided the other way. I think that the decision they got to in the end was something that I thought from the get-go that they really should be considering extremely seriously. And when Picard sums up, I'm pretty much with him on that. I think that the issue in Kardashians, I can't quite remember the issue in Kardashians as well, but I think one of the main factors there is that you're living in a ruined country / planet that is still suffering hugely after the occupation. It was like an 80-year occupation or something like that. And it wasn't correct for it to happen, but it was almost the reality of the situation, the hostility, the amount of revenge that there was throughout the rest of the the rest of the society that it was living in. It almost felt like society would have to take its time to come to terms with Kardashian orphan.
Okay. All right, Brad.
Well, the decision itself, I kind of liked the scene where Picard was down in sick bay. Riker was assumed command, was doing some dialogue with the father Endar regarding the return of his son, and Jono had attacked Picard, and that he was going to be kept with the Federation to stand trial. And then, of course, Picard had his little discussion with Jono down in sick bay, and of course, due to the miracles of modern medicine, was able to return to the bridge. And set a diplomatic solution to return Jono to his people. And I felt this was a setup for possibly when I saw this, Jono could serve as in a diplomatic sense between the two people in the future, where kind of bring them together and maybe bring the Talarians in the fold of the Federation. That's kind of what my thinking was. I think it supported with the way they put the whole set the whole thing up. So yeah, I think it was the right decision. Could have gone the other way, but TV episode, so we know things are going to end up all right.
Right. Okay. All right, then, yeah, I kind of agree. Brad, you just said it could have gone either way. I think returning him back to the elderly couple would probably have been terrible. He probably would have been a disruptive influence, spread lies and whatever. I don't remember where I got that from. I'm sure it was another Star Trek episode. But, in the end, I would have probably done the same thing, and quite honestly, I thought Sisko was wrong. I didn't think he should have forced the boy to go back to his Bajoran family. So I guess kind of that would have been the same decision for me as well. Obviously, this guy, and that's why they pressed this issue, this guy was willing to die. He was willing to attack his enemy for this boy, and that's all the boy knows, so yes, they were right. The only thing is, I'm curious why they didn't have a little bit of, at least a few minutes of Jono being angry at Endar for killing his parents, you know, was that missing, James?
No, I don't think you can have that. I don't think, well, first of all, you don't know that it's him, right? He didn't physically murder his children. And I thought that kind of his stoic explanation right at the beginning of the episode, or at least earlier in the episode, I thought it was a reasonable one. I thought that he had kind of come to terms with this. He knew that there was, you know, it was war, someone had died, and frankly, this was kind of his second life rather than feeling bad. Now, you know, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe in 10 years time or so he goes postal and he starts you know, getting very angry with the, you know, with his current parents or his current family. But I personally thought that he had come to terms with that, and I thought that he wanted to get back to that life where he had come to terms with that, and he had made the transition away from his human life over to his terrestrial one. And I thought that he was able to kind of compartmentalize these two facets of himself so that they weren't mixing, and I think that's really what was driving him away from coming back, quote unquote, home, is because he didn't want his very rigid new self identity to be challenged. And I think that if he then starts talking to his current father about the attacks, then he's still challenging that identity. So I think he probably goes back to the way he was.
Okay. Because one thing we didn't mention about is in his talk with Picard, Endor seemed rather cocky, actually. I thought he was, I mean, it seemed in Picard's face as he's listening to the details that, we were driving out these people who are transgressing on our land, and, you know, we killed them, and next to this dead body was a scrawling, scrawny little boy who was crying, and it was almost like he was proud of that battle and proud of the trophy that he was able to take, and that would have been Jono. But did either of you detect that at all during the conversation?
I think the words that he used to describe the battle certainly lean in that direction. I am going to call out, though, the idea of it being a trophy. I don't think that's where it was coming from. Because I do agree that if it was that, right, if it was, hey, I've gone around, I've killed lots of people, and I've claimed, you know, 50 of their children, then I don't think it's any sympathy with that particular individual. I don't think you then want him to have all these human kids raised. So I didn't feel that it was a trophy. I kind of thought it was kind of a humanitarian reach out, and under, you know, and then he came to terms with it as being a true up, a fate, you know, a fatistic true up, whereby he lost his son and he gained one, you know, later down the road. So I didn't feel that it was the trophy, and so I would just question that. But certainly he was cocky in the way he was describing the actions and, you know, and the circumstances in which he found the child.
Okay, all right. So I guess there's only one last thing to discuss here, and I think we're pretty much done. And that is, what do you think Admiral Rosa does to Picard after he reports that what he decided? Any discipline at all? Did he get in any trouble? Or, you disappoint me, Captain. Admiral Rosa out.
Well, no, I actually didn't. I actually thought that, so I thought that the fact that this was an admiral, the fact that she had kind of, it was very clear that she had no extended family, the fact that she mentioned that they had a proud heritage in the family, or at least they had a family line that would make him proud, it kind of also, it sounded as if, I actually felt that it sounded as if this woman would be happy to be aware that this person was alive and was doing well and making his own decisions. So I didn't actually think that she wanted him back per se. I think that had that been the boy's choice, then she would have stepped up and taken care of things. But I actually got a very, once again, I used the word stoic. I got a very, you know, a very stoic attitude from that particular woman. I don't think they were, you know, we're not talking about a dotty old grandmother that's sitting at home all day yearning to raise kids again. She does have a professional life. She does has had tragedy in her life, and I think that she considered. I got the impression that she would consider taking this on board as duty she has to perform, rather than this kind of emotional yearn to recover something. And as a result, I felt that she would probably be. She wouldn't be distraught. She would be understanding with the situation.
Mm.
But maybe I'm reading too much into it and projecting.
I don't know. Okay.
Well, I think that that she was happy that to find that he was alive and would have maybe some open communication in the future and still be in contact with Jono in the future. I think that's one of the things that led me to believe that Jono might be set up to be a diplomatic figure between the two governments, I guess you could say, in the future. And I think it was, I think that part was really well done. I'm kind of looking forward to, maybe never happened, but I'd like to see what happens with Jono in the future. If that story continues. And I thought it ended up a positive note.
No, it's a one-off character. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It was. Sure it yeah, it was. Spoiler alert. Yeah, it was.
Someone's going to shout out. Surely someone's going to shout out, but not in the books, right?
Right. Yes. That I could see, too. Or the fan fiction. You're right, the fan fiction or the books. Yeah. Jono goes on to lead a revolt against the Federation. If only, or maybe he becomes the new Borg king. And tries to take over the collective. No. Okay, yes, that was a play on Lore from last week again, when I called Lore the Borg Queen at one time. Okay, well, if you guys don't have anything else, I guess it's time to go to our final thoughts. Anything?
Final thoughts are good.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay, good then, I guess. So it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Interesting, thought-provoking, I suppose. I could see, like you said, it goes either way. I can't really decide which decision would be the best, but in the end, I think Picard made the better decision. I don't know if it's the best one, because the question is, what's in the best interest of the child? There was obviously no reason why Picard had to turn the boy over. War with the Talarians would have been very short-lived. But in the end, the boy would either kill himself or others in an absolute protest of being with humans, so Picard probably did the right thing. If he were returning, as I said earlier, if he were returning to his parents or siblings, I could see forcing him to re-enter human society. But what will he do with his obviously elderly grandparents? And it seemed like it was pretty clear. They were showing she is rather old. And, you know, what would the choices been? Maybe not old, but still. They're nowhere near each other that they would have had anything interesting to each other or could have lived with each other. So it's, again, an interesting story. I came in not right thinking it was very high. But in the end, it's kind of like a middle of the road for me. So I think I'll probably just give it a 3. What about you, Brad? Why don't you go ahead and go next and tell us what you kind of thought overall and give it your rating on 1 to 5.
Well, it didn't do a lot for me as far as, it didn't really excite me. It did show some, it had a lot of heart. It had a really heartwarming ending that really kind of helped develop Card's character, helped further develop his character as being a very wise a leader. But I think in the end that really not much to say about it. I thought it maybe it was a 2.5, 3 somewhere in there. You know, not the best, but you know, it was worth an hour of my time, I think, to watch it. Gave me some food for thought.
All right.
So I think it's worth it in that respect.
So you say 2.5 to 3. Which one?
Yeah, we'll give it 3.
2?
Give it 3.
Do you give it 3? Good.
3.
Okay.
Give it 3.
Got it. Okay. And James, how about yourself?
Well, I mean, to be very clear, any episode of Star Trek's worth at least an hour of my time. That always goes without saying. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, I don't want to be a hater on this. I think we've had a good discussion about a lot of the issues, and it's strange that even what I would consider to be a bad Trek episode, you can do that. You can have these discussions, and they are, you know, it is a level above other kind of stories being told in like similar shows. So, you know, this kind of thing doesn't come out that much. You don't get these situations, these questions being asked, and as a result, you know, this is probably why we love Trek, I suppose. I personally think, you know, I don't think it's that great. I think it comes in at a 2 in my mind. I think that the story was too black and white, which was the right decision to do from the crew's perspective for the vast majority of the episode, and I felt that I was on the opposite side of the argument to them. So that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I also didn't like, as I've mentioned, they tried to make a light-hearted story out of this issue. Card feeling out of step. I think the last, like, you know, 10 minutes or so, it does very well to try to turn it around. You have the potential for this to end on too much kind of Federation smugness, and, you know, let us take our child back from these savages that don't know how to raise a child, and they didn't go there, and I respect that, and I think that was absolutely the correct decision to do, even though they, you know, they can look at the issues from both sides. So yeah, I mean, It's certainly not the best episode in season 4 of TNG. It was, you know, below average in my mind, but still, you know, still we've had a nice long chat about it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, what was that score?
2 out of 5.
I was right. Yeah, Brad, I try to guess at our James's and the guest score to see, you know, based on how it was, and I had this one right. All right, so as it stands, with 4 episodes in, the guests are losing this year. Because what we do is I have an average here, and let's see. And so far, I'm rating season 4 at 4 stars. James is rating it at 4.25, and the guests are 3.88. So
that can't be true. It can't be 3.88.
It is, because
but hang on, because we have Best of Both Worlds must have been
a five, and then Colin gave Family a 4, and Simon gave Brothers a 4.5, and Suddenly Human is getting a 2 from the guests. That's 15.5 divided by 4 comes out to 3.88.
I thought that Brad gave it a 3 today.
Oh, he gave it. You gave it a 3, Brad?
You keep trying to make me give it a 2. I said 2.5, and he made me pick 2 or 3. I picked 3. I went out above. Just because of the heartwarming ending.
Okay, well,
it's worth half a
point. Yeah, right. That puts me down in the bottom of the row at 4.0, where the guests have 4.13. All right, guys. Okay, well, hey, Brad, thank you for coming on again. And one thing I do not know is, what team is yours? Your daughter is Olivia on?
She is on team number 3. I'm team number 3, red team.
Team number 3.
Oh. I think that's the one, right? 1 is yellow, green, 2 is blue, 3 is red, 4 is purple. Yeah, so team number 3.
You know, I'm going to write this down. Say that again. 1 is what?
Kind of a lime green, yellowish green.
Okay, two is the blue, sort of. Mm-hmm. Three is red. Four.
Red.
Four is what?
Purple.
Purple.
Your team.
No, she's blue.
Oh, that's right. You're blue.
Yeah,
sorry.
She's blue.
Four is purple.
Okay.
I told you I couldn't tell the difference between blue and purple.
I was having a hard time doing that too. So team three looks like our team plays yours tomorrow at 6 o'clock on the Crown Field. We'll see you then, bud.
That'll be a pleasure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really think if she hurt her leg or her knee, I think it's best to keep her out this week. I mean, would you? And then next week there's only one game on Thursday. That's why I thought let's bring her back for action on the 19th. I mean, what do you think?
I think that would be prudent. I sure hate to have her go out and before she's ready and have her, you know, really injure herself and be laid up or something like that.
Yeah, and if she's
she really
go ahead.
Oh, she really did look like you know she twisted it and it popped and everything. So I'd err on the side of caution.
Right. And if she's faking it all, well, then I guess she shouldn't have, because now she's going to miss a couple games. And she really, really wants to play. So I don't know. I think we'll come tomorrow. I think, well, I don't know if we will or not come tomorrow, because I don't get off work till 6:30. And so her grandmother would bring her, and then I would come after work and watch the rest of the game or pick them up. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get out there and, you know, watch them play. And
well, if not, we'll catch up next time for sure.
Well, yeah. Because we would play you again that Thursday, following Thursday, and then the following Sunday, that's graduation. But if not, I guarantee you we'll see you on May 22nd when our team is going to kick your bats. Get it?
Weather permitting.
Oh, yeah. Knock on wood. So, yeah, you're right. That weather has been hitting us pretty good. All right, then. Thank you again for coming on. James, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on. You know that.
Yes, absolutely. And a pleasure, Brad, as well. Appreciate it.
All right.
Pleasure was mine.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation, a helpless Dr. Crusher watches all her friends and family vanish.
They're all gone.
An unexplained force leads to an invisible massacre.
There are now over 900 missing.
Confusion turns to desperation.
I need you to tell me if I've gone completely mad.
Is it a deadly mind game or a real-life nightmare on Star Trek, The Next Generation?
Thank you, everyone, for downloading and listening to tonight's show. And join us next week as we review episode 5 of season 4 called Remember Me. Remember Me. And
that's going to be with Furbob, right?
That is Paul Furbob.
Excellent.
And I kind of like that one because one of my favorite actors is the little old guy who plays Dalen Quayce. He's just the cutest little old actor. And where I remember him was from the old late 70s movie called Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. So if you've never seen that, you need to. And Doc, you know what I'm actually writing down as a list of movies I would want you to see? And I think I'm going to bring a few DVDs. And when you take them back home, you could start watching all these American movies that you didn't know existed, like Office Space.
Cool.
Yes.
Somewhere in Time is Natalie's favorite movie.
Yes, I absolutely love that movie. I mean, even like Christopher Lloyd and... Christopher Reeve, but Christopher, I can't think of his name. Walken. Anyway, He's the one that, you know, he's on Star Trek, whatever number that is, The Undiscovered Country, as Kang. You know, the guy with the eye patch and stuff. But anyway, James, does that help at all?
That is Christopher Lloyd, right?
No, Christopher Lloyd was the one we just saw on Search for Spock. Admiral Cook! You know, no, it wasn't
him. That's a really good impression. You nailed it.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, because of Reverend Jim from Taxi. Well, Admiral Cook, you won't give me the Genesis device. Okie doke. But,
okie doke, right,
yeah.
Very good.
So, but anyway, okay. And you guys have a good night and see everyone next time. And good night.
Yeah, good night.
Say good night, Brad.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye.